Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program. This Monday, January 9th, 2017. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up in today's program, leaders from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, have been meeting in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, to solve the crisis in Gambia to ensure a peaceful transition of power.
The point that they made, of course, is that nothing should be ruled out, but they are going to invest all their energy on ensuring that the outcome and the process are peaceful.
And we will be reading some of your comments regarding the ECOWAS meeting that has been discussing the political crisis in Gambia.
That's right, indeed. Teachers in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon resumed their strike over the continued influence of the French language, leaving students stranded at the beginning of the new academic year.
They should give us the room to go back to school and be studying while the government and the teachers sit down in the table and discuss how the problems can be solved.
Stick around for these stories and much more. But first, let's bring you up to date with other stories from around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Leaders from the divided Mediterranean island of Cyprus are meeting in Geneva for crucial talks on its reunification. Greek Cypriot leader Nikos Anastasiadis and his Turkish Cypriot counterpart Mustafa Akunca are discussing power sharing, territorial adjustments and security as part of a proposal to bring Cyprus back together again under a federal system. United Nations Special Envoy Espen Barth Eide said the UN was facilitating in these talks, but it was not arbitrating.
These talks are fully led by and owned by the Cypriots. It's the leaders in Cyprus that are responsible for every single sentence, every single word.
In Ivory Coast, Prime Minister Daniel Kablan-Duncan resigned and dissolved the government on Monday, a move that had been expected following elections last month, but which was delayed for 2 days by an army mutiny. Duncan had been expected to stand down on Saturday, but held off after dissident soldiers took over army bases in cities across the country on Friday, demanding bonus payments. It took 48 hours to reach a deal to quell the revolt in an army that is made up of government troops and former rebels. Lawyers acting for former Chadian President Hissène Habré launched their appeal against his life sentence on Monday. Habré was convicted and sentenced by an all-African court in Senegal in May for war crimes and crimes against humanity. He has refused to recognise the court's authority, but his court-appointed defence requested an appeal on his behalf. Life imprisonment for Habré brought closure for relatives of up to 40,000 people who were killed while he was ruler of Chad from 1982 to 1990. The appeal hearing is expected to last several days. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Germany has threatened to halt development aid to countries that refuse to take back rejected asylum seekers. The warning came from Vice-Chancellor Sigmar Gabriel and Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière and was evidently aimed at Tunisia, the home of the suspect believed to have been responsible for the Berlin Christmas market lorry attack in December, which killed 12 people. Germany denied the suspect asylum in June 2016, but Tunisia initially refused to accept that he was a Tunisian citizen, which blocked his return home. In the UK, Londoners were hit by travel chaos while commuting to work on Monday, as workers on the Underground Rail network staged a day-long strike over low staffing. Meanwhile, mainline train services struggled to cope as commuters sought alternative ways of getting to work. London's Mayor Sadiq Khan said the stoppage was unnecessary.
I accept the case. There should be more staff on our underground. I've carried through my promise to have an independent review on ticket office closures. So let's talk about our differences.
For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
Leaders from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, have been meeting in Nigeria's political capital, Abuja, to try and solve the crisis in the Gambia using peaceful mediation as against the earlier suggestion of military intervention. Yahya Jammeh, former coup leader who has ruled Gambia for 22 years, initially accepted this defeat by opposition figure Adama Barrow in the December 1st election, but a week later reversed his position, vowing to hang on to power despite a wave of regional and international condemnation. It has now been decided that the presidents of Nigeria, Sierra Leone, and Liberia will visit Yahya Jammeh on Wednesday to discuss with him to hand over power. That's according to Nigeria's Foreign Minister, Geoffrey Onyema. Before the resolution was announced, the Nigerian Foreign Minister had spoken to DW's Africa correspondent, Adrian Krish, about the meeting and the possible deployment of troops in the Gambia should Yahya Jammeh refuse to hand over power peacefully.
The point that they made, of course, is that nothing should be ruled out, but they are going to invest all their energy on ensuring that the outcome and the process are peaceful.
The news reports about the possibility that Jammeh is recruiting rebels from other countries. How do you see that, and is that a risk that might push the conflict further?
There have been a lot of rumors, and it's not always clear what is true and what is fiction. So this meeting is really to try to verify as much as possible and as far as possibly can be done what is true and what is not. Now, obviously, if that turns out to be something that is being planned, then obviously the necessary steps will be taken to address that.
People are really scared there that there might be another war breaking out. You say the situation will be assessed, but if Yahya Jammeh does not take ECOWAS mediation attempts serious, is ECOWAS ready, and does ECOWAS not overstep its boundaries when it says we are ready to deploy troops?
ECOWAS has not said as such that they're ready to deploy troops. That's not the conversation of the leaders at the moment.
But does it have the mandate to do that?
Yes, they can have the mandate. I mean, it's up to the Council of Presidents in ECOWAS. They can, yes, they can definitely, give the mandate for such a deployment.
Nigeria's Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema speaking to DW's Adrian Krish. Iran began 3 days of mourning this Monday after the death of ex-president Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, a pillar of the Islamic Revolution who became a leading counterweight to hardliners. The front pages of today's newspapers were dominated by the face of Rafsanjani, who served as president from 1989 to 1997, and black banners were raised on Tehran's streets. A short while ago, I spoke to DW's Shora Azanush from DW's Farsi service about the legacy that Rafsanjani is leaving behind.
Well, I think the way Hashemi Rafsanjani will be remembered can be very different from one group to another in Iran. But there are two main tendencies that are more visible among others. One group tends to focus more on his past. To be more precise, the period following Iran's revolution in 79, he was one of the closest people to Ayatollah Khomeini, the supreme leader at the time. He was the chairman of the parliament. He was called the second man of the government after Khomeini himself. He took part in the most of the big decisions taken in Iran, and there are some very dark decisions among the ones he made, like the executions of 1988. There is this second group that is more thinking about his more recent political career, when he joined the Green Revolution and he became one of the main figures of the reformist movement inside Iran. That's what is, from my point of view, the two main tendencies.
His goals included bringing Iran out of international isolation and ushering in an economic boom, but he made less progress than he hoped to. Why is this the case?
Yeah, I think Again, there you can also see two phases in his career. At the beginning, where he had more power, he was going for economical development model that didn't prioritize political improvement, expansion, freedom in politics at all. But little by little, he changed and he became more and more inclusive and then closer to these reformist ideas that also said, yeah, we cannot be completely isolated in our international politics and we have to open up. But I think, unfortunately, by the time he got to this point, it was already too late. He didn't have the political power to make the change.
And his popularity maybe had gone down, isn't
it? Exactly.
Okay. Now, his death has been described as a big loss for the moderates. How easy would it be to find anyone like him? I mean, were his shoes so big to be filled in? What do you think?
Well, that's what we are following on the news since last night, also on social media, that most of the people are thinking that he probably he won't have only one successor, but he has started a new approach, which is more open towards other countries politically, economically, and he will be replaced by the group around the present president of Iran. Yeah.
I was speaking to Shora Azanush from DW's Farsi service. To Cameroon now, where teachers from the English-speaking regions have resumed their strike over the continued influence of French in a country that's meant to use both English and French as official languages and on an equal basis. But the teachers said the French language remains dominant even in the regions where it's not popular. They would like this to change. As Mokinzeka reports from Bamenda, students would want to resume or to see their teachers sort out their grievances with the government amicably in order for them to resume classes.
Out of the 4,000 students expected at government bilingual high school Bamenda, only 17-year-old Oben Ashu showed up on the first day of the term. He says he is afraid the teachers' strike action will compromise his education.
They should give us the room to go back to school and be studying while the government and the teachers sit down in the table and discuss how the problems can be solved. Because staying and waiting that the problem should be solved before we go back to school will jeopardize our future.
The teachers called the strike to protest what they call the overbearing influence of the French language in the bilingual country. English speakers constitute 20% of Cameroon's population, and the Constitution says English and French inherited from colonial masters should be equally important. But most official documents are only in French, and administrators and teachers without a proper understanding of the English language are sent to work in English-speaking regions. Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of the Southwest region, issued a warning to teachers should they continue to stay out of classes.
We are informed that there are threats going on, but education is a fundamental right for the children. This is names of teachers who failed to attend classes during the last term. If the same names come back to this office.
That report was compiled by Mokinzeka, reporting from Bamenda. And now it's time for Social Radio. And the topic we're going to discuss is about ECOWAS, isn't it, Wanjiku?
Yes, indeed. And we have a comment from T. McLean, who says, it is very interesting to see ECOWAS has quickly moved from meditation, its key instrument, to threat of deploying PSO. Mama Sar says, backing away from immediate deployment of troops by ECOWAS means Jame continues with efforts to stay on forcefully. Abdu Adama is still in the celebratory mood and he says, congratulations, Your Excellency Nakufo-Addo on Twitter on being sworn in as the fifth president of Ghana. You now possess the power to make ECOWAS work.
And just to remind you a little bit later, before we came on air, the leaders of ECOWAS decided to go and visit Yahya Jammeh, that is the president of Nigeria, Sierra Leone and Liberia, to try and convince him to leave power peacefully. This is a story that we will continue to monitor on our page. Just visit it and comment, send your comments, and we shall read them whenever we can. In case you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanji Komora from the social media desk.
In the next 15 minutes here at Africa Link, health officials in Zimbabwe announce a ban on the hawking of food on the streets of Harare following an outbreak of typhoid. The hawkers have vowed to resist the order because of unemployment.
That is a shocking move that can only come from any irresponsible government. If they were responsible enough and cared for the people, then they should have engaged a process of finding ways to create a conducive environment.
How silent is the protest in Cameroon? We find out what you think on the social media.
But first, let's head to South Africa, where President Jacob Zuma has promised to address problems of corruption and infighting within the ruling African National Congress Party, ANC. He made the pledge as the ANC marked 105 years of existence. The infighting within the ANC has threatened to tear it apart ahead of presidential elections in December 2017. In the meantime, the ANC's Women's League said that they would back Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma as a presidential candidate. From South Africa, Subri Govender reports.
President Jacob Zuma was given a massive ovation when he joined the celebrations to deliver the party's plans to reclaim itself from corruption, factionalism, nepotism, entitlement, and leadership battles. In a speech that lasted just over an hour, Zuma tried to emphasize the absolute importance of unity, while stating that the ANC was determined to overcome the social and economic problems still facing majority of black South Africans. He acknowledged that the ANC has made many mistakes over the past few years.
We call on ANC members to be decisive and stamp out gatekeeping, ill discipline, factionalism, the buying of members, and the manipulation of internal democratic processes.
But despite the appeals by Zuma and his ruling ANC, it seems factionalism will not just disappear. The ANC's Women's League has already announced that it wants Zuma's former wife, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, to succeed Zuma as the party and the country's president. But Abile Dlamini is the Women's League president.
She has been in the struggle in her own right, leading in the structures of the ANC, not the Women's League only, and holding various positions in government as well as in Africa.
This stance will put Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma directly against the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who by tradition should succeed Zuma. Ramaphosa is being supported by forces such as the Trade Union Federation, COSATU, the South African Communist Party, many regional premiers and cabinet ministers. The Minister of Science and Technology, Naledi Pandor, highlighted the concerns of many people.
We know the kind of leaders we want. We don't have to have a long discussion about it. So let us, as the membership, assert what we want to see, because we know we don't want corruption. We don't want people who believe public resources are for their pockets and not for development. We don't want leaders who take us for granted.
On the sidelines of the celebrations, Ramaphosa, who is ANC deputy president, had this to say on the lack of integrity and morals within the party.
We've been having factional fights about 2017. We've been having divisions amongst ourselves, plotting against each other, saying all manner of things.
Many political analysts, like Ibrahim Fakir, believe that while President Zuma has tried to promote the importance of party unity, the culture of factionalism appears to be enmeshed.
To me, what appears, the statement appears to be, is some kind of compromise between the kind of, what some people would term recidivist noises, which have come from a faction which supports President Zuma, with the kind of messages which prevailed when those who wanted to pass a motion of no confidence in him at the last NEC.
The ruling ANC will choose its next leader at a party conference in December this year, and it seems the battle has just begun for the factions supporting different candidates.
Subri Govender reporting from South Africa.
Health check.
Health officials in Zimbabwe have announced a ban on the hawking of food in the capital, Harare, following an outbreak of typhoid. The food vendors have vowed to defy the order, as it is their only source of livelihood because of the rampant unemployment. More than 2,000 cases and 9 deaths have been recorded since the beginning of the typhoid outbreak in 2016. DW correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushanri, filed this report.
The streets of Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, are heavily littered with vendors walking from everywhere. All manner of goods are found on the street pavements. Some are selling fruits, vegetables, in some instances, fresh meat and fish. Street vending has become a source of livelihood for a large part of the population owing to high levels of unemployment. Health authorities believe the uncontrolled selling of foodstuffs on the streets is fueling diarrheal diseases like typhoid, which has hit the capital. Health Minister David Parirenyatwa announced a prohibition for hawking foodstuffs and fears if the current conditions are not controlled, cholera could be the next to affect the country.
There's no doubt that we will not win the war against typhoid if certain conditions persist in the country. And our biggest fear is cholera. We can manage more or less with typhoid, but cholera will just be a nightmare for us.
Many vendors have reacted angrily to the announcement, saying it's a threat to their source of livelihood. Ronald Mureverwi from the National Vendors Union Zimbabwe explains.
That is a shocking move that can only come from any irresponsible government. If they were responsible enough and cared for the people, then they should have engaged a process of finding ways to create a conducive environment so that they support the efforts of Zimbabweans who are trying to earn a genuine living, because vending is not criminal in any way.
Mbare, Harare's suburb hardest hit by the typhoid outbreak, is in a sorry state, from uncollected garbage piles to poor drainage system. The suburb also happens to house Harare's biggest vegetable market. A heavy stench greets you when approaching the market.
The council must clean up. Even farmers are now failing to sell their produce. They must clean up.
It's painful to have a recurring health problem in the same area. People are always sick. If council officials come to fix bus sewer pipes, they do a half-baked job. Should we take it upon ourselves to fix everything for the sake of our health?
Harare's City Acting Corporate Communications Manager Michael Chideme says they are unable to provide services because some residents are not paying rents.
The same residents, the same vendors, the same customers who are in Harare or the city, over 550 million money which is supposed to go towards safe delivery. If that money is not paid, the city cannot sponsor safe delivery from Norway.
This now seems to be a standoff between residents and the city council. One only hopes that the tiff will not result in the 2008 to 2009 cholera outbreak that killed more than 4,000 people.
Privilege Mushanri with that report. Time now to catch up with the world of sports. With only 5 days to the kickoff of the African Cup of Nations, AFCON, African teams are in the final touches and preparations ahead of the start of the games in Gabon this Saturday. To discuss that with is Sekione Kitojo, a football commentator from DW's Swahili service.
There are teams which have been participating in every finals of AFCON, like Senegal, Algeria, Tunisia, Cameroon. These teams, I think they are the ones which are very, very tough in their groups. Maybe one of those teams which I've mentioned may be in the finals. It's very unclear who is going to be the champion, because anything can happen with the players from Europe acclimatizing themselves to the African weather and everything. So you won't say that this team is very strong, is going to win.
And in your analysis, what are the teams to watch out for this year?
maybe the group B, which comprises Senegal, Algeria, Tunisia, and a new team, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, yes.
Yeah, so we don't know what is the secret behind Zimbabwe getting into these finals this year, but the way they have been participating in the knockout stages, it means that they have something.
This could be the group of death.
This is the group of death to me, but still there is Ghana and Egypt, and Uganda and Mali. Uganda, they have a young, dynamic team. I think they want to show the world that they have, good players. So they are going to put a very spirited fight before maybe going out.
How difficult is it going to be for European leagues to cope up in the absence of their star players taking part in AFCON?
Let's start with here in Germany,
in
for
the
example.
Bundesliga.
In the Bundesliga, there are few players, important players. For example, Borussia Dortmund, they have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who is the leading scorer in the Bundesliga right now. But in other teams, I don't know if the absence of the players will have an impact in other teams. But in England, for example, many players who are playing in Premier League, playing, for example, Tunisia, Senegal, Morocco, Ghana, and these are very important. Premier League is going to be affected.
DW's football commentator Sekione Kitojo. It's time again for our usual social radio segment. Wanjiku, what do you have for us?
Well, we had a story earlier about the silent protest in the English-speaking region in Cameroon, where the town was a ghost town.
Yes, if you're just joining us, the English-speaking Cameroonians are alleging discrimination by the government. And what are people saying about it?
Adre Marie says, I prefer civil disobedience to mass destruction. Then using the hashtag Ghost Town Monday, this is how you can get more of these comments. And there is also Chief Bisong Etahoben who gave an update and said, Anglophone Cameroon is in complete lockdown, protesting against Francophone marginalization. Schools due to reopen today remain closed. We also have another comment here coming in from Elvis Teke, who says, this is the second term schools resume and in 8 out of 10 regions in Cameroon. Schools in Northwest and Southwest are empty. Markets are closed and taxis grounded.
Yes, the region had seen protests last December 2016 for the same grievances.
Yes, and Abel Helter says, I have finally witnessed the most deserted school reopening day in Cameroon, ghost town ongoing in the Anglophone regions.
We also ran a report looking ahead at the future of South Africa's politics. The ruling party celebrated 105 years on Sunday.
And Isaac, there has been so many varied responses to that, especially after word got out that the ANC Women's League had endorsed Nkosa Zana Ndalamini Zuma as candidate to succeed Zuma.
Yeah, many women would like Nkosa Zana Ndalamini Zuma to succeed Jacob Zuma. What are people saying about this?
Yes. Simfiwe M says, can someone please clarify and explain what exactly has Dr. Zuma done and achieved at the AU? Makashule Ghana says, Jacob Zuma might be the last ANC and SA president to deliver January 8th statement in 2019 when South Africa is supposed to be having their general elections. We are kicking ANC out. Mohamed Sbu says anything to do with Zuma, including his family, is not good for our country.
Remember, these are just your comments that we're reading from our Facebook page. Anyway, very quickly, Wanjiku, what else do we have?
We also have the German Vice Chancellor Sigmar Gabriel, who have proposed that countries that do not accept rejected asylum seekers may not see German development aid. And one comment we have says, I love the German government compassion it showed to refugees, but I don't like what happened to Germany sometime later regarding the terrorist attacks.
This was in the news and also on our Facebook page. And you too can join in the conversation.
And that's right, like our Facebook page and comment on the stories that matter most to you.
And before we leave you, just a reminder of our top stories. Leaders from the ECOWAS have agreed to visit President Yahya Jammeh of the Gambia to convince him to step down. That brings us to the end of this edition of Africa Link. This program returns tomorrow at the same time. From me, Isaac Mugabe.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
Goodbye and take care.